Welcome to the We Have a Meeting podcast, where we sit down with the world's smartest thinkers to give you the actionable tools, insights, and strategies that could make your life more impactful and productive. This week, we have a meeting with...
So today we are joined by somebody who lives and breathes sales. So I've had many interactions with this man on LinkedIn, and we couldn't wait to finally sit down with him and discuss the world of sales and coaching. So he's the author of Problem Prospecting and the sales director of Allego. It's Mr. Mark Akers. How are we, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you, Jack. Very well. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. It's great to be here with you. And I've seen you all over LinkedIn. Obviously, I see a lot of posts of people promoting your book and saying very lovely, kind things about you, Mark. So I thought it'd be great to finally sit down with you and discuss. But I think a good place to start is my dad will be very kind with our choice of words. He gets very confused. So if you were to meet him in a pub and you had to describe what you do for a living, what would you say, Mark?
So I feel like your dad might be very similar to my stepmom, who thinks I'm a nuisance phone caller because I'm not out digging holes in the road. It's not a proper job. So if I was to meet your dad for a bit, first of all, I'll ask what he's drinking. Get that in. And then, yeah, if you said to me, what do I do for a living? I'd proudly say I'm in sales and leave that as a headline. A lot of people might try and hide from that or disguise it, but I'd lead straight out the gate. I'm in sales. And if he asked me, what do I sell? I would tell him a story, because that's how I sell. I'm a storyteller. So I would say to him, I want you to imagine a company that have got a team of people that are based on the phone. They spend their days speaking with customers or potential customers over the phone. Can you imagine that? They'd say yes. And then I'd say, here's the thing. They all report into a manager. I'm sure he'd be with me so far. And I'd say that manager's job is to ensure that the quality of those conversations is as high as possible and they get the best possible outcomes as often as possible. I'm sure he'd buy into that. I'd then say, here's the problem. There are normally anywhere between 8 and 15 people reporting into that manager. Those 8 to 15 people may have 100 calls every day. The problem, therefore, is the manager doesn't have true visibility as to what's going on in each and every conversation. Makes their job very difficult because they don't know what's going on. Therefore, it's hard for them to identify who needs help, what good looks like, and have best practice across the team. And that's where we come in. So our technology is like an extra set of ears. It listens to every call and does all the heavy lifting, including transcribing and analyzing those calls. And based on the transcription and analysis, it will send the calls to a manager that they will want to listen to based on what's being discussed. From there, they can give coaching, guidance and feedback and spend their times in the most important areas, ensuring that as often as possible, calls are of the highest quality and they're getting the best possible outcomes and their team are being as successful as possible. That's what I'd say to your dad. What do you think he'd say back?
He'd say, bloody hell, Mark. It's a pint of Guinness. Let me buy you a pint of Guinness. That was bloody good. I'm sold. I don't even work in sales, but I want it. No, that's brilliant. And I think from what you're saying, and I know how kind of how you promote yourself on LinkedIn as well, it sounds like you really are invested in the growth of the next generation of SDRs.
Yeah, I totally buy into that, because I know what it's like being an SDR that doesn't have that. I always feel a little bad saying that, because I had a manager that I know cared for me and wanted the best for me, but did they sit down with me every week truly to coach and develop me? No, because they had the problem that I was talking about. Lots of people reported into them, and my manager was actually, when I first started out in sales, like the CEO of the business, so had many, many things to contemplate with. I've been in sales for like close to 15 years. And it's only really the last 5 years that I've been coached regularly and seen the impact that it's had. And I think when we've got youngsters starting out in what is now a really difficult role, it was hard when I did it, but also it was very simple. You built a list, you called them up, you fire enough bullets, you're gonna hit some targets. But now you don't just have to be a good cold caller. You've got to be a creative writer. You've got to be a content creator. You've got to be comfortable on camera. You've got to be comfortable leaving voice notes. You've got, you know, some people write poems. You've got to be a researcher. There's so many things you've got to do as an SDR. And factor that all in with the fact that this is maybe their first ever job, straight out of university or college. Secondly, they're trying to capture people's attentions in what's a really crowded marketplace. And the people they're trying to reach out to are doing jobs they've never done. You know, if I think back to the people I've sold to in the past, I've sold to assessment managers, like, you know, people who literally their job is to create and deliver assessments. I've sold to hotel managers. I've sold to marketing managers. I've sold to HR managers, all jobs that I've never done. And I think that's a real difficult piece for the SDR. They're trying to communicate and resonate with someone that does a job that they've never done. And, you know, there'll be SDRs listening to this that sold to construction managers, never been on a construction site in their life. Factory managers, never been in a factory in their life. So not only have they got to know these roles that they don't ever have any experience in, they've got to learn all of these different ways of communicating on all of these different tech stacks. They need more help now than ever before. And I wished I had the help that I've had in the last 5 years at the start of my career, because I think how much further I could have been on.
That actually leads nicely into the next question. So you've laid out there perhaps the problem for SDRs or the complexity of the role. So from your experience, what makes a good sales leader, given all that, taking all that into account for an SDR, what do you need to have to be a good sales leader?
I think there's a lot of things, right? And I'm not sitting here saying I'm a great sales leader. That's for my team to decide. For me, it's about putting them first. It's really easy. Like, I've had great sales leaders and I've had not so great ones. And the not so great ones, it wasn't always through their own fault. They just didn't know what to do, or they didn't know the best way to do it, or how to get the best out of me. I know I'm not the easiest person to manage, or have been the easiest person to manage, because I've got a very certain way that I like to be managed and respond to. But that doesn't speak just about me. That's everyone's got their own way, right? Everyone likes to learn in a certain way. Everyone likes to be taught in a certain way. Some people like to be really practical. Some people like to be classroom-based learning. So as a sales leader, it's about how can I help the individuals individually and collectively to be as successful as possible. Like, where are their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? What's the plan as well? And it's about utilizing one-to-ones. You know, when you sit there, we've got an hour, we've got an hour and a half here. This is what I think we should work on. But, you know, what do you also want to work on? Where are you getting your success? Where are you not? How can we fine tune and tweak that? But then also review that in a week's time, review that in a month's time. You know, what is the plan of action? And I think the other thing is, you just got to remove all excuses. So, and everyone's got excuses, and some, you know, excuses are genuine reasons, and some are just, you know, excuses where you're kind of like, yeah, come on. But you've got to remove all of them, to the extent where if they're not having the success that they need to have and they've got no excuses, then you've done all that you can do. So there's lots of things that you can do, but I think ultimately, yeah, it's about putting the team first. It's about having a plan in place. It's about measuring that plan. It's about adjusting that plan. It's emotional intelligence, because sometimes the plan goes out the window, depending on the one-to-one. And it's about removing all excuses and enabling them to have everything they need to be successful. And if they're not, there's only one person they can look at, and that's themselves.
That's a great point. The accountability piece, I think, is a great point as well, especially in, we've all been in sales jobs before, haven't we, where you blame the data or the tech or the leader or the company, and the last person that gets blamed is often yourself. But I know from my side, when I first started looking at myself and being like, actually, you're a bit crap at that bit, and then investing some time in getting better, suddenly, lo and behold, things suddenly get better. So I think that's an important piece of the puzzle. What about in terms of people who have those kind of peaks and troughs in performance? Have you got anything that you found from being a leader that helps alleviate those, or are those just inevitable?
So consistently inconsistent salespeople. Here's the thing, like that is not uncommon, right? You'll find people that have great months and then bad months, then great months, then bad months. It's about understanding the difference there. And for me, typically that comes down to activity, taking your foot off the gas, almost like cruising. And then it can be other things as well, like just not factoring in that perhaps you've got a 2-week holiday, not factoring in that summer's coming up. Depending on your audience, like let's say, for example, you sell to sales managers, not factoring in the end of the month or the end of the quarter, people are going to be busy, etc., etc. So I think there's that, but it's also making sure they've got a plan in place, and there's a real balance there. Some people will want the manager to write their day for them. This is your calendar. This is what you do. Go away and do it. Other people want to create that themselves, but they kind of need you to do it for them, but in a way that feels like they've figured that out themselves. It's a little bit like that movie Inception. You've kind of got to get them to come up with the answers so they feel like it's their own plan, but secretly you're sat there thinking, that's the plan I wanted you to have, but it feels like less like it's forced upon them. And that's not always easy.
Well, so I'm going to go back to my dad in the pub now, because he's got a few things to say on what you've been saying, Mark, because I think with you guys, so I'm going to do my dad, and he's going to go, right, so your team sell to people that work in sales. That's what I'm guessing, sales managers, sales leaders, directors, CEOs, but people that will have an eye over the whole sales floor. Do you feel like they're under scrutiny more so? Do you feel like it's a harder industry because you're hitting people where they know what, or you would hope that they know what good sales is?
So yes is the answer, like it, but it's a blessing and a curse. And I always tell people, like in the interview process or when perhaps someone in my team's maybe having a difficult couple of days, I tell them this is the blessing and the curse of this role. First of all, you're selling to sales leaders. So immediately, when you speak to a sales leader, they will be comparing you to themselves. They'll be brilliant, because everyone in sales has got an ego. You know, even the worst sales reps think they're brilliant. So they're in the mind, when they're speaking to you, they think, well, are you as good as me? Because I'm amazing. They'll be comparing you to their team. And everyone's, you know, passionate about their team to an extent. Obviously, there might be a couple that they're not as in love with. They might have inherited them, et cetera, et cetera. But everyone backs their team. So they're comparing you to themselves. They're comparing you to their team. So you need to be good. You're then selling them a technology that we have, which is a sales enablement and sales coaching technology. So you almost need to be a product of your own product. So it is difficult in that sense. And as cool as it is, some people like being on the receiving end of a pitch because it's their turn to be difficult, because they've had that. That doesn't happen too often, in fairness. So that's the curse. But here's the blessing. If you can do a good job and you can build empathy with that person, humanization, familiarity, they're going to give you all the time in the world, because they know what it's like to be in that role. They know how difficult it is. I'm always really respectful, or at least I think I am, to cold callers. You know, even if it's not for me, I'll always end the call by telling them, look, keep doing what you're doing. Keep having conversations. Don't let this put you off. It's not personal to you. If you can build that empathy, that humanization, that familiarization, and actually stand out from the crowd, which isn't too hard to do, then you will get someone that will give you the time of day. And throughout the sales cycle, if you can just build that relationship with them, you'll get so much from them. You'll get the real reasons that they might not move forward, the real reasons they might move forward. You'll get what the blockers are going to be, because they know how a sales cycle's run and what you're trying to do. So it's a blessing and a curse, but I can say with confidence, I'll never work for a company where I don't sell to salespeople. I really like it. I feel like that is my calling, and I like dealing with salespeople. I see it as much more of a blessing than a curse, despite it being difficult.
We found in our role as well, when you speak to other salespeople, there's often like an initial empathy, especially with the opener that we use. People are like, well, I'm not going to hang up on you because I'm in the job as well. It'd be terrible for me to hang up on you. And yeah, so there's certainly like an empathic approach. So we like those clients as well. Okay, so when what we found, I mean, we're a young business. We've got a sales team. We'll have a sales team of 10 people by the end of this month. And one thing that we've started spotting is when salespeople hit target, that Friday they've hit target, they go out, they're young, they have a big weekend that I'm sure we all used to do when we were younger. And then Monday morning, it's often hard to get that motivation going again, get them back into a new month. So what have you found is kind of best practice for motivating salespeople, keeping them engaged from a, you've just done really well, now I want you to go out and run that marathon again and do really well again?
So it's about understanding what they're trying to achieve. Like, what is it their commission's being used for? So when I was an SDR, I had a list every month of all the things that I wanted to buy. And on that list would be the value of that stuff. So there would be like my football ticket. There would be like a night out with my girlfriend. There would be my phone bill. There would be poker night. Whatever it was. Right? I had this big list of all the things that I wanted to buy that month and how much it cost. And I always saw that my commission was to pay for everything I wanted. And my salary was my commission, so to speak. Like, that was my bonus money. That's the sort of mindset that I had. I've always found having lists and ticking things off is what helps me have a purpose in terms of what I want to do. So like, I use Trello every day. I've got this Trello board, which I've only just started using. I used to be pen and paper kind of guy. But so in terms of my SDRs, it's about encouraging them, like, look, What do you want to buy with your money? Like, let's write it down. Let's have a list. What are you working on? And it's about reminding them of that. And I think the next thing as well is just really using the competitive nature of salespeople. So when they've hit their target, you can say, that's great. What are you going to do to make sure you not only hit it, you obliterate it? And it's about just, it's phrases like, right, now's the time to really put the foot down. Now's the time, right, to strike. And it's about encouraging them that your targets are really like the bare minimum. And we've got other things as well, like, you know, you can have accelerators, you can have spiffs, et cetera, but understanding what are they trying to achieve, having that list in front of them, and trying to really set that fire underneath them. And it's little things as well, like, you know, we'll do like little spot prizes, like, look, if anyone books another meeting today, I'll buy you a drink in the pub, or, you know what I mean? You can get a gift voucher on Amazon, something like that. But it is funny, I do seem to find prizes seem to motivate people way more than anything else. I've joked that we're going to call their commission prizes, because like, little spot prize, people go mad for it.
What, I might sound thick here, what's a spiff?
Spiff is like a quarterly bonus that we have. If you're going to ask me what it stands for, you're going to be gutted because I can't remember.
Okay.
But basically, it's like a quarterly bonus. So whatever SDR books the most meetings, has the most people show up, has the most move into the next stage of the sales cycle, wins that spiff, and it's a bonus every month.
Nice. When we first started hiring people, we did a recruitment day. And it was interesting hearing what other sales leaders and sales teams are prepared to offer to SDRs, because we were like, oh my God, I can't offer a holiday to Monaco. Yeah, I need to start thinking on my feet a bit more. So we've started adding... Sorry, Mark, go on.
I was going to say, you know what it is, right? I never won a single prize in my life as an SDR because they weren't on offer. Like, they were never on offer to me. Literally, my commission was my prize. I am always just a little bit like, it's really good today, like, what you can win as an SDR. Yeah. Like, there is a lot out there. You know, for me, it was my list was my prize. You know, just ticking it off. But, yeah, there is a lot of stuff being thrown out there for SDRs now.
Yeah. I remember actually saying when it got around, we were last and it got around to me and I said, I'll be honest, I can't offer you a holiday. I can't offer you any of those things. And it almost won us a few friends with the recruits there, didn't it, Jack? They were like, well, I quite like that it was a bit more down to earth and honest. So your company's quite big on tech, and that's kind of the bread and butter. I'm imagining that you're also seeing other kind of rival tech or complementary sales tech that exists in the space at the minute. Where do you see the next 5-10 years of tech advancement and tech enablement in the sales world?
I think that's a really good question, right? And if I knew the answer to that, I might be setting up a company and trying to create it. I think the reality is, right, there's a lot that's going to happen in this space. 10 years is too hard to call, but over the next 5 years, I actually see some consolidation, tech stacks merging, coming together, trying to cover more bases. Because there's so much out there now. Like if you look at the tech space, you could, and it's all, you know, subscription, annual subscriptions, etc. And you are starting to see companies start to buy other companies and start to expand their portfolio and offer more. I think the real thing that's going to change, though, is the amount that's available to a rep to help them be successful automatically. It's about reducing that new hire onboarding time. It's about giving people access on demand to content and best practice. It's about making them as effective as possible, as quickly as possible. And it's changing salespeople from order takers to consultative sellers, and enabling them all in a remote world. You know, I can't quite tell where you two are, but you can probably tell I'm in my spare room at home, as are so many sales professionals now. And there's this big debate, you know, should we make people go in the office? Should we make people work remotely? I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, I don't think you should sit someone down and say, this is your desk, this is where you work, this is where you need to be for us to get the best out of you. I think you should empower people to pick and choose where they work. And if that's at home, that's at home. If that's in the office, that's in the office. But, you know, I think you still need some time together with your colleagues. But largely, the sales floor's gone. You know, people will be joining companies in a remote world. They won't get to hear conversations that, you know, I remember when I was starting out, I'd sit opposite salespeople. They'd get off a demo and I'd be like, wow, that sounded amazing. What happened there? Or you go, that sounded difficult. What happened there? And that doesn't happen anymore. We're all sort of in our own silos for a vast majority of the time. Mm. And a lot of companies are embracing that, particularly companies that are looking to grow, because recruitment's really hard. And the best talent doesn't always live on your doorstep. If you want to recruit the best talent, they're going to have demands, not just salary-based, but I want to be able to work from home. I want more flexibility. So you need to embrace that, I believe, to get the best talent into your business. And that's particularly important for companies that have got ambitious plans or perhaps in that hyper-growth phase. So it's more the tech space, I think, is more consolidation, more about putting the rep at the center. It's about giving them what they need to be successful in the moment of need. And that's what my company does. So I feel like I'm in a really exciting place.
No, it definitely is. And I think it's, if you can do that remotely, for us, I know that obviously the SDR role is one of the hardest roles out there. So the way that we do it, we're quite lucky. We're in Manchester. There's loads of people that want to come down and work in the office and things like that. But it gets people going, being around people where they can listen to it and experience it firsthand. So I guess you touched on a lot of the points there, Mark, but in terms of obviously the last 5 years, I know that the whole working from home thing has completely changed. In terms of the actual like sales element and in terms of like technology and things like that, can you, because you mentioned some great points earlier. We're a phone first company, but you mentioned some great points about people writing poems, or I imagine sending gift hampers and all these different things. What do you think has changed in the world of SDR within the last 5 years?
What I think has changed, for the better or for the worse?
You, whatever you want to say, Mark. It's your day.
Well, let's do both, right? So for the worse, it's for me automation. I totally get it, and maybe look in sales and selling to sales leaders, it's more difficult. I remember job before last, I sold to hotel managers, and I was selling e-learning, and I'd bang them all in a sequence. And they were none the wiser. You know, third, fourth sequence, they'd reply back, "I'm so sorry, I've missed your emails, let's have a chat." None the wiser. If I put a sales leader in a sequence, they caught on to it pretty quick. And I actually think it's more damaging. I think sequences are helpful, and I think there's definitely a place for them. But the amount of sequences I'm in is crazy. It gets to a point where I do reply back, and I'll say to them, like, "Look, I don't mean to be funny, but this is like your 12th email to me and I've not replied, or this is your 12th LinkedIn message to me, I've not replied. Apologies for that. This is the reason I've not replied. Please take me out. It's getting a bit much." But I know there's so many sales reps that will sit there at the end of the day and go, "What a day I've had. Enrolled 100 new people in a sequence. They're going to get 10 emails each, going to hit target." And I think that's what's happened for the worst. What's happened for the best is sales reps that want to be better than that have just gone to another level. If I had an SDR sat next to me 10 years ago that was sending video messages, sending voicemails, writing poems, researching their prospect to send incredibly detailed messages, I would honestly think, what's going on? Like, that's crazy. You know, I was just sat there with a phone making phone calls. So I think SDRs now are really talented, particularly the good ones, right? They're striving to be better, and they're not just using their managers as well, right? They're using all the content that's out there. So there's so many people writing unbelievable content just on LinkedIn alone. And they're not just writing content, they're making videos, they're sharing tips and tricks, they're sharing playbooks. It's all free. And then some of them have gone onto YouTube. I've got no doubt some are on TikTok. I don't quite understand that app. I think it's just videos, but right, they're on there. You know, one of my SDRs is on TikTok, and he was saying to me he's had like 500,000 views and followers. Sorry, and I was like, just to understand, is that like a follow like on Twitter, or is that like a, I still don't quite understand the answer, but it's 500,000 or something, right? So here's my point: SDRs now that want to be better, they want to step above the automation, the sequence, are taking their time, they're writing great emails, that personalization, they're being creative, they're using multi-channel approaches, and they're talented in so many different areas that's going to stand them in unbelievably good stead for when they become an AE. So I think that's what's changed for the better. The quality of SDR is higher. There's just not enough of them.
I think the negative point that you made around the sequences, we actually were bought into buying something, and because of the sequence that we got put in over the course of a week, it was just the most intense thing ever. We actually decided to go with a competitor in the end based on that. So it shows you that people might think it's being clever, but often it's either being lazy or you're just doing someone's head in. Like, especially if someone really does need, just give me a week to get all my ducks in a row and I'll come back to you, we really like it, we're going to sign up on Friday. How you can mess that up with a sequence, I mean, we'll tell you. You can.
Yeah. I can well believe it. Because here's the thing, after the first email, it's really hard to personalise. It's hard to personalise for a second, third, fourth, fifth. I tell you, nothing will boil my whiz more than this, right, is if I get an email in the middle of the night on a Friday, or in general, but particularly when it's like Sunday night, 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday, or 5 o'clock on a Saturday morning, it really annoys me. And I shouldn't let it trigger me, but I look at my phone, and it doesn't wake me up, doesn't disturb me. Sometimes it does. When I had an iWatch initially, it used to, and I had to go onto my iWatch and turn these notifications off. So I'd be sitting there with a glass of red wine, trying to watch BGT, and my phone's pinging off. I've got someone on the fourth email, I just didn't need that. You know, that was my time to relax. So yeah, nothing really winds me up more than a sequence when you just know come on, mate, it's like 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, you're not working. Like, that's just, it's just laziness, and it actually turns you off, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%. So, Mark, I think you've got a really good understanding, and obviously a varied understanding of the SDR landscape. We've traditionally hired graduates with no experience. Our thought process there is no bad habits, easy to train up from the ground up. But what would you say if you were looking at that kind of pool of talent, someone who's just left university, never been in sales before, what are some things to look out for of their kind of malleable qualities and things that we can really find a diamond in the rough out of?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to hire graduates. You know, I remember being a graduate, and there was that balance of some people want you to have experience, but they weren't paid to give it to you, and other people were paid to take you on, but perhaps it wasn't the best of jobs. I think graduates have a lot to offer, but there are things you need to look for in a graduate. So the things that I would look for, first of all, is any sign of timidness, shyness, they're not for me. Any sign of that. Equally, someone that is super arrogant, really cocky, not for me. And I appreciate that's a narrow corridor. But that, I think it's so important to find that right level. You know, can they sit there and tell you about themselves without being shy, but also without sounding like they're arrogant? So it's looking for that. It's then looking for, are they coachable? Are they going to come in and be willing to learn? And we do a test during the interview program to see if they're coachable. It's about, for me as well, looking for, have they had a job with grunt work? Like, have they gone out and done hard miles before? Because I think that says a lot about someone. The best sales leaders I have all had terrible jobs at some point in their life. And, you know, I'll tell you my jobs, right? And these will sound awful. First of all, I had a paper round. Okay, doesn't sound like a big deal, right? But it was the biggest paper round in my area. It was 5 nights a week. It was up 3 of the biggest hills in my area. And it was 50 papers. And I used to look at the other paper rounds, and they had like 10, 15, maybe 20 papers. And it was all in the... I had to walk a mile to deliver my first paper. And over... I did that from 13 to 15. So I did that for 2 years. I missed one paper round because I was unwell, and my dad did it for me. I missed one paper round. So I had a big paper round, and you can probably tell that by looking at the wrinkles around my eyes, right? People always say, you must have had a tough paper round. I worked in a bacon packing factory. So literally, I stood at the end of a conveyor belt from 5 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, putting raw bacon in packets, and then putting the packets in a box and packing them away. And there were times where, like, I had to clean out the skip. Like, you know, this huge skip with all this like rotten meat, I had to clean it out, and I had to clean the factory down every night. It was the worst. I've worked in a cafe where basically this big Turkish guy just sat there whilst I cooked these builders breakfasts every morning. He sacked me after a couple of weeks because I was too slow. Because I cooked food like how I'd want to eat it. And people used to say, like, it doesn't... I remember one customer said, the quality of cooking's gone up in here because it doesn't taste like it's come out of a morgue, because he would serve it so raw because he was so quick. But I was like, no, I like my bacon crispy. We'll cook it properly. Anyway, let me go. Then I worked in a theme park. It was, honestly, you got there at 10:30 in the morning and you didn't leave your ride till 11 o'clock at night. And I was on you got 2 half-hour breaks, but it was like 12-hour days, and that was 6 days a week. And then I did all that whilst I was at college and university. So I've had loads of shit jobs with loads of grunt work, really repetitive, poor pay, no opportunity to progress, but I kept showing up, kept doing it. So I look for that as well. You know, when someone's had a bad job, I know they're going to appreciate how good this is here. So yeah, coachability. Have they got the right level of confidence? Have they had a job with grunt work and they're going to appreciate it? And I'm then looking for people that can just tell stories. Can they articulate themselves well? Can they give good examples? And it's really interesting, like you giving the dad story there. Like, you know, imagine it's my dad, because it's easier for me to talk to someone that's not here. You know, great question to ask someone in an interview is, who knows you better than anybody in the world? And then when we say, like, oh, my mum or my best friend, and you say, right, let's imagine I know them, how they describe you. And that's where you get the truth. It's a really disarming question. So those are things I look for. And then finally, I want to understand why they want to be in sales. Because being an SDR isn't glamorous to start off with. You know, there's lots of work to be put into it, very little reward to start off. There's days where you do so much activity and you get so little back from it, and you question what you're doing with your career. And I know as well, a lot of your family and friends will question it as well. You know, I used to be really embarrassed by my job. I used to think I did sales because I couldn't do anything else. And of course, now I've totally flipped on that and really proud of that career, as I said at the start. But I know for people who start out in sales, they might feel like they're doing that because they haven't got a marketing job, they didn't get that PR job, they're not working in finance, and they get offered a chance to be in sales, and it's not quite where it matches up to be. So it's about understanding, why do you want to be in sales? Managing the expectation, telling them what a day looks like. So those are the sort of things that I'd look for in an SDR.
I think we'd mirror much of that as well. But often, as you say, I like the term, it's a narrow corridor. But yeah, I agree. We've ended up interviewing 15 people once in a day and actually saying, I don't think anyone had it, to be honest with you, out of them. It's better to make that choice. But well, look, Mark, we've taken a lot of your time. I think that's been really insightful. I've definitely taken loads from that. If people want to find your book, they want to pick your brains, they want to employ your company after that great pitch at the start, where are the best places to find you?
So the best place to find me is LinkedIn. So Mark Akers, A-C-K-E-R-S, at Allego, A-L-L-E-G-O. So LinkedIn's the best place to find me. I do try to write content every day, although conscious of it today. I do try to write content every day that is sort of practical advice, sales tips, tricks, stories from everyday life that leads to sales. Really to try and help SDRs and AEs and sales managers. So LinkedIn's the place to find me. Yeah, in terms of the book, so the book's available on Amazon. So if you head to Amazon and look for Problem Prospecting, it's a book I feel, unlike many others, it's filled with actionable tips and tricks, scripts, playbooks to make you successful. It's kind of like the manager that I never had at the start, but at the side of my desk that I can turn back to. And weirdly, I use it myself. There'll be days where because I didn't write the book by myself, I wrote it with my colleagues Rich and Stu. There'll be days where I'm just like, right, I genuinely flip back to my own book. So that's available on Amazon as well. And there's like 180 reviews on there as well. So if you want to have a quick read and make sure you're making the right choice, then pick up a copy. So that's where you can find me. That's where you can find the book.
Amazing.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for taking the time. And sorry, Jack, go on, mate.
No, I was going to say, are we going to be seeing you on TikTok anytime soon, Mark? Or is that a flat no?
I think that's a step too far. I think the way I've sort of described TikTok is I feel like the best videos find me. A little bit like music, the best songs find me rather than me go and find them. So, no, just LinkedIn for me. I've got a question for you too, though, if I can. You spoke about your cool opening and the cool opening that you use disarms people. I think everyone would like to hear that. Maybe you've shared that in other podcasts, but I'd love to know, what's the cool opening you use?
We use a few. They're based on the kind of Sandler pattern interrupts. So there's the classic Benjamin Dennehy one of this is a sales call. Would you like to hang up or give me 30 seconds and decide? I was ringing to talk to, so I've got a company who sell EV charging points. I ring up and say, I was ringing to talk to you about putting EV charging points into the car park. I don't know if that makes you want to throw your phone out the window. But they all lean on that. Jack's got a few clever ones as well, haven't you, Jack?
Which one? What, for gatekeepers or? I've found that
gatekeeper
simplified.
One I like the best.
Well, when you ring up a gatekeeper and you say, Mark, I'm so sorry, I was meant to call you on Monday. How was the holiday? Was it Benidorm you went to? They go, whoa, slow down. Who is this? I go, it's Jack. And they go, you've not come through to Mark. Oh, right, okay, is he in? Yeah, let me put you through. And then you get there and you say, Mark, I'll be honest,
I like
it's
that.
A sales call. I don't know if you want to hang up or let me have 30 seconds. I don't know if you want to slam you. I like the ones where you can hear they're driving. I say, I know you're driving. I don't know if you want to wind down the window and throw your phone out, or you just want to let me have 30 seconds. It's entirely up to you. You can try and personalise it. Depends where they're standing in the world.
I really like that. And I think that's a really key thing, like picking up when someone's driving and using that to your advantage. One thing that I'd add to those, because I was talking about building that familiarization, that humanization, that empathy, is I like to say from one sales professional to another, can I take 35 seconds to explain why I've chosen to call you? And some people go, well, I don't sell to sales leaders, I can't say that. But you can, because if you're in marketing, you can say, look, from one marketing expert to another, from one construction expert to another, because from you are an expert in what you sell. Even if you've only worked at the company for one day, you've had 8 hours in that company more than anybody else. So you are like an expert in what you do. So I always find that line from one X to another X really, really, oh yeah, they're like me. And people like people like themselves, even if it's just that little bit more.
Do you think that could...
There's a lot in that as well.
Sorry, I was going to say, do you think that could, for a new SDR that runs into that and says from one sales expert to another, and then all of a sudden they're not picking up on certain things, or they might, do you know what I mean? If it's very new role, do you think they could go, well, actually, you've just spoke about yourself, but then I can't imagine the people that go through your training would talk about themselves.
So I would change it. Sales professional. We're all professionals. One marketing professional to another, one sales professional to another. We're all professionals, even if you only do it for one day. Here's the other thing, just on that, right? No one's right in sales. No one's wrong. It is all opinion-based. And I've used this analogy before. Like I've nicked it very obviously from Ricky Gervais, right? But it's very true. He always says about like religion and mass and science. It's the same for sales. You can take every sales book, rip it up. Take every maths and science book, rip it up. In 1,000 years' time, the sales and maths books will be exactly the same because it's right or wrong. All the sales books will be different because anything anyone ever says on sales is their opinion that's been moulded by experience, what they've read, what they've heard. So if anybody said you're doing something wrong in sales, it's just what you think is right or wrong, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
There'd be someone that listens to this podcast and thinks everything we've said is a load of rubbish. And there'd be other people writing it down and playing it back, and a lot of people be in the middle, you know. It's all just opinions.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully it's not my dad.
Right, well, Mark, we've taken enough of your time. Thanks very much for sitting down with us today, and hopefully we can do it again.
Yeah, no worries. Really enjoy it. Thanks for having me on. Best of luck, guys. Cheers.
Thank you, Mark.
Our books are now open. Friends, Romans, countrymen, if you're looking for more sales, and that might be getting more meetings in the diary, meeting more of the right types of people, or breaking into a new area or sector, we've got you covered in two key ways. Number one, we can do it for you. We can kick the doors down, get you the meetings, and do the prospecting that you hate. Or number two, we can teach you how we do it so you can do it for yourselves, creating repeatable, predictable results. So if you're interested in either of those things, www.wehaveameeting.com and hit the contact us form. Speak to you soon.